Good morning. I confess that my spiritual journey has been a long one with too much foot dragging. And it occurs to me in preparing for today that feet have been a prominent feature of my journey. Going way back to when I was in junior high school, I was in a play entitled One Foot in Heaven, and I played a young pastor. Many years later, our son had the role of Professor Harold Hill in the high school production of Music Man. And ever since then, I've been haunted by the line from the professor, "I finally got my foot caught in the door," knowing full well that I have long had my foot caught in the door of God. And when it finally came time for me to fess up to my congregation, to tell them I was done with foot dragging, I was going to retire from the practice of law, and I was going to enter seminary, the sermon title was Both Feet In. Well, surprise, surprise, Pastor Eileen graciously invited me to preach today, and the text is that beautiful story from the book of John about Jesus washing the disciples' feet. So there you go. I'm honored to be here and to talk about this tender and compelling example of love. The book of John, of course, is the last gospel written. It's very different from the other three gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And one of the big differences is this story of Jesus washing the disciples' feet. It was just before Passover, and Jesus was having his last meal with the disciples. And the story, as it is told in John, there's no mention of the familiar text from the other three Gospels about Jesus blessing and sharing the bread and wine, the Eucharist, the Holy Communion, the Lord's Supper. That's not in the book of John. Instead, we have this story in the book of John where Jesus does something very unexpected. Jesus, during the meal, rose, took off his outer robe, put a towel around his waist, filled a basin, and began to wash the disciples' feet. Now, is there anything unexpected about that? Not about foot washing. That's not unexpected. Scholars have great consensus that in those days, in that area, foot washing was a social chore that was taken for granted. If you're walking in sandals on a dusty road all day in the hot sun, your feet are dirty and tired and could use a washing. But what was unexpected was who did the foot washing and for whom. Ordinarily, when a guest came to the house, the host would offer water so they could wash their feet. And if there was a servant, a servant could be assigned to wash their feet for them, but not the host. And in this story, we have Jesus, the disciples' leader, their Lord, Rabbi, Teacher, Holy One, Messiah, Jesus washing the disciples' feet. When Jesus took off that outer robe, he took on the role of a servant. Jesus became a servant to his servants. John reports also that disciple Peter wasn't too happy about Jesus taking on the role of a servant and said, "Lord, you're going to wash my feet? You'll never wash my feet." Of course, Jesus insisted and did. John also indicates that Jesus knew that one of the disciples would betray him. And despite that knowledge, Jesus washed the feet of all the disciples, even the one who would betray him. So what might this story about foot washing mean to us today? Is it a strict commandment that we should wash another's feet? And if so, when and how often? Did it apply just to the disciples or to all Christians then and now? Was it a symbol of baptism? Did it present Jesus' death to the disciples? Or was it an example of humble service to another? Thomas O'Loughlin is a professor of historical theology in the University of Nottingham, and he recently wrote a book entitled Washing Feet, Imitating the Example of Jesus in the Liturgy of Today. And he addresses many of those questions, but he feels that foot washing is at the very core of the gospel message. But he notes that for generations, for centuries, Christians have sought to diffuse, sanitize, or even eliminate the practice of foot washing. And he acknowledges why that is the case. The first chapter of his book is entitled Awkward Moments. And the first line of that chapter is, quote, "Washing someone else's feet is always awkward, indeed distasteful. The gentle touching of another's feet seems just out of bounds," unquote. Well, the United Church of Christ, the UCC, has a book of worship, and it includes an order or example of how you could do a worship service with foot washing. It's not required, but it's an option. Well, I grew up in UCC congregations and have been a part of UCC congregations all my life. And until I was adult, I never participated in a foot washing ceremony or worship service. And I think that if foot washing occurs, it's usually like on Monday, Thursday is a common time. But thinking about it now, I remember an incident when I finally had my feet washed by someone else. And I thought about that. Not many people have washed my feet besides myself. There'd be the hospital nurses when I was born, and there'd be my mother and members of the family. And get this, Jonna Jensen, Associate Conference Minister of the Iowa Conference. Some 20 years ago, I was part of the Center Learn Lay Ministry Program, and the capstone of that were some pilgrimages to Pilgrim Heights Camp. And on the last pilgrimage, I went to the camp, and I and the other students were advised that the very next day, we would engage in a ritual foot washing with Reverend Jonna Jensen. Well, I was a little apprehensive about sharing with a bunch of strangers something as personal and not so beautiful as my feet. In fact, I panicked. I thought to myself, did I bring any socks that don't have holes in them? And it gets worse. Do my toenails need trimming? Will my feet smell? So I managed to sneak off during the break, drove to Marshalltown, purchased new socks, toenail clippers, and returned to the camp unnoticed. Whew, crisis avoided. The next day for the ritual, it was clear that all of the students were uncomfortable. And two women that I knew from church had already determined that they were going to wash each other's feet. And two other men teamed up, so that left me as the fifth student wheel, or 10th foot as the case may be. And no problem, Reverend Jonna Jensen said that she and I would team up. Unexpected love and grace. So the one and only time that I've engaged in a ritual foot washing was with a then stranger, and a distinguished associate conference minister. To say the least, Reverend Jensen took the role of Jesus, and I was more like the reluctant Peter. So, well, it turns out it was a beautiful, tender worship experience. Reverend Jensen had some liturgy for us to read and played music, and we sang a chant of Kyrie Eleison, Lord have mercy, over and over again while we did the foot washing. And by the time we got done, chanting Kyrie Eleison was as normal as breathing. And from that experience, I would have to say that all of us that experienced it, we were closer to each other, and we were closer to the love modeled by Jesus. So however you interpret and respond to John's story of Jesus washing the disciples' feet, this much we know: the story is explicitly offered as one more example of Jesus' love. As the text says, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. And after the foot washing, he said, for I have set you an example that you should also do as I have done to you. I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. So what can we learn from this example? Jesus served. That's what love does. Jesus did it with humility. Humility is how love is genuine and not self-serving. Jesus served when it was unexpected. That's when love is most needed and probably most powerful. Jesus served with no expectation of gratitude, and even served those who might be undeserving. Love is more about extending grace than imposing restrictions. Foot washing may not be a required ritual, but as Christians, we are called to humbly serve in unexpected ways with love and grace. I didn't expect this, but just this week, I was reading the book, The Republic of Grace, by Charles Matthews, in which he suggested that this contemporary world that we live in, with the countless choices and distractions and incentives to serve our desires rather than God's hopes, that this world we live in is actually threatening, as he puts it, our capacity to be creatures of love. There may be some merit to that, but standing against it are all of you and I. As members of or visitors to a community of faith, we are here by choice. Our faith and how we live it aren't distractions. They are central to who we are and who we may become. I hope that you can all think of times when persons extended unexpected love and grace to you and you to them. Given the recent news in this country, I think it's appropriate to focus for a final moment on humble servants that we call teachers. And I come by these reflections naturally because my wife, both of my sisters, my sister-in-law, and my daughter-in-law are all teachers. Teachers who secretly provide money for a student to buy new shoes or lunch. Teachers who send extra food home to a needy student and he's backpacked. Teachers who provide extra tutoring before school and after school. Who give a student extra time because the student lives in the family car. Who give the student extra time because the student works all night to support the family. Or a no-nonsense teacher, unbeknownst to his students, is the top blood donor at the local hospital. And 3 times a week, he goes to the hospital to walk and cuddle sick babies. or the teacher who gave a kidney to a stranger, the dying mother of one of her students who lived. And of course, tragically, the growing number of teachers who have died attempting to protect students from a shooter armed with an assault weapon. Jesus was and is a teacher too. And we are Jesus's students. Jesus was and is love's example. And we are called to be his disciples. Amen.